How a few have shaped the lives for so many. It is always time to pay tribute. Stay tuned. Good afternoon. I am Chrissy Hewitt, and this is Ears on Art, a twice-monthly segment of issues and ideas. My co-host, Stephen DeLuque, and I produce this program here at the studios of KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Today, we continue our conversation with Roseanne Seitz. We were interested in talking with Roseanne about her artwork. She's a watercolorist and painter who loves to work outdoors, but she also has been part of the rich heritage that is the San Luis Obispo County art scene. She and I first met when we were serving on the board of directors of the then San Luis Obispo Art Center. You'll hear us refer to it as the Art Center. It is now San Luis Obispo Museum of Art because that's what it was for many years of our intense involvement. This community is absolutely amazing for the number of individuals or very small groups who have, with their dedication and passion, shaped the cultural aesthetic of this area. We are talking here mostly about the visual arts, but it absolutely has taken place in the performing arts as well. Stephen and I now continue our conversation with Roseanne Seitz. We begin with the acknowledgement of a major change that took place in Paso Robles a few years ago. Stephen and I were able to have a conversation with Studios on the Park about 2 weeks before the doors actually opened for the first time and before they had their arts festival in the park.
Yes, it's Paso Art Fest.
Right. Yes, yeah, so just what happened with all of that energy in terms of finding a building and being able to get it remodeled, and then the whole idea of becoming a nonprofit and having the artists working on site so that you'd come and could buy a piece of work that was, you know, hot off the press, so to speak. I'm not as familiar with what all is happening more in South County, but Los Osos now has, I mean, they've got piles of artists, as Stephen can tell you. They've jumped on the Art After Dark event, and Los Osos is not a walk around kind of downtown, so they're doing it at the community center.
And that was just a temporary thing, too. That was just during the summer months, and that was designed that way, is that they were just going to get it during the summer months, tourist season and things like that. And it was also with collaboration of the people who managed the community center as well. And also the part in Paso Robles with Studios on the Park, the city was gung-ho behind what they were doing and really helped them out a great deal. So we do have to give kudos to the city councils in the county.
We do. It's essential. We live in an area that doesn't have a huge population base, so we rely on our local population and tourists to come through to pay money to see the arts, to buy things or to support it in that way. It's been a challenge all along to keep a number of galleries in San Luis Obispo to keep the gallery association viable. And the same thing with the other cities. It's essential to have that city support. I've always looked at it as one of the entertainment things that happens in San Luis. People come for the wine. People come to go to the ocean. People come to be around the city. And they come to view the art. They don't necessarily buy the art, but it's part of the entertainment. And as such, it really supports the city and deserves the city support back.
We talked before about when the Art Center was struggling with its nonprofit status. Fortunately, Steve Dorsey came to the rescue, and fortunately, he was able to acknowledge that that property was zoned, you know, for what it was. It could not be a retail shop on that side. So, I mean, it was a very logical thing with the mission and with the Art Center and the thing to say that's what this place is. And so having that kind of backup of people who believed in what you were doing services. And donated a lot of services and We've been talking about all of this in terms of the visual arts, and we could go on in terms of the performing arts, be it music, be it theater. I just find it amazing what this county has pulled together because of inspired people doing grassroots activity and making things happen.
Yes, I agree 100%.
To me, it's phenomenal. We are a relatively small community. I mean, San Luis is less than 50,000 people. The county is less than 300,000 residents. And the amount of artistic expression that's supported by the community, I think, is amazing. Because as you were saying, all the disciplines are represented and most of them are thriving. And that's because of the support of the public.
And the cities, the organized community service districts, cities. I know Julie Dunn has done artwork for Napomo Community Services District and for the City of Paso Robles for the website. They also have the Paint the Box, where they're painting all the utility boxes and providing artists with money to do that kind of thing. Gets the art out there, but also gives the artists an opportunity to earn some money. Support our habits. We have to have a way to buy the paint and buy the paper and buy the frames.
Exactly. Well, you talk about the boxes, and again, Arts Obispo has its Art in Public Places committee that has been responsible for getting public art. Now they are party, along with a couple of other agencies, with the cow project that's coming. These are fiberglass cows. The real ones don't want to stand still long enough to be painted, but...
And the Cow Project, too, is called the Cow Parade. That's actually an international event.
Yes.
It's been all over the world, and San Luis Obispo is the only city in California that was selected to participate. So we should be very, very proud
very
of that
proud.
Fact. Yeah.
And they're lovely, and they do create a lot of interest from everybody, locals and tourists. I think another thing we should add in here is that we do have some artwork by Humanity. We have Bubblegum Alley, where... everybody who wants to can put up bubblegum. It's kind of a controversial thing as whether that's art or not, but I think it's a wonderful way of self-expression and being a part of a group collaborative project.
And you can't walk down it without getting in the way of somebody taking a picture.
It is the most photographed site in San Luis Obispo, and our store is just up the block from it. And there are literally bus tours that stop, and German tourists get out and take pictures and climb back in the bus, and off they go.
And we haven't even acknowledged Open Studios, which has been an annual
exactly.
event for 17. Now is the 18th year
I think
coming
we're
up?
The 18th coming up.
That was another thing that... happened. Kate Stilberg was the director at the Arts Council at the time and started Open Studios, and that has been wonderful. It's such an exciting event, and love the opportunity to get out when I have had the opportunity. Now they do it all on the same weekends, and we're open both weekends, but at first, South County was one weekend, North County, so we got to go up in the North County, and it was so neat to be out driving through the countryside in October to find these little studios tucked here and there and to meet the artists and see the artwork.
First, Open Studios only involved the city of San Luis Obispo. It didn't go outside the city limits. And it literally was a typed up sheet. I think there were like 17 participants or something like that in it. And last year we had 230 or something countywide. So it has become quite an event.
At one point it was close to 300, and people realize how much work it is for them to get ready and do it. And then if the reason you have your doors open is only for sales, you can come away disappointed sometimes because there's too many artists and not enough money going around and people lose change in their pockets. So we've been trying to help get people to do more demonstrating. Focuses kind of on the studio aspect.
I look forward to it because it's the one time of year when I have to clean up my studio and get it all organized. And the little projects that I thought of, I should do this, I should do that, I get them done. Mm-hmm. And so studio gets cleaned out and I can hang a lot of artwork of mine so that people can get a real feel for the different series that I do.
When you do something like that, and I think that we can spend a lot of wonderful time talking about what's been happening in this county, but we also want to find out more about Roseanne Sykes. When you've gotten ready for Open Studios and you've hung art all over, what happens when you stand back and look at that selection?
Well, I'm pleased to see it and I'm pleased it up, but I would say that my real joy is in creating it and being out there. It's a very euphoric feeling for me to be either painting in the studio or outdoors, but more so outdoors, deciding on the composition, forming in my mind my plan of how I want to accomplish this with watercolor. There's a lot of pre-planning that goes into it versus redoing things over that you can do with oil or acrylics. So the planning, the shapes, the colors, how it all comes together, how your eye goes through the picture, that's the exciting thing for me. And so then when Open Studios comes and I can hang it up and I can look at it and I can say, oh yeah, I like that. Well, none of them are perfect.
Really?
Right. But I can say, yeah, I really like that, how that idea came out. And then next time I want to do it this way, or, you know, get clean washes, get it right the first time, that sort of thing. Yeah.
I asked that question in part because it was kind of amazing for me to pull out work, and I'm not a prolific creator, so there were pieces of different eras. But there was something kind of amazing to see it, that much of it in one space, mm-hmm. cleaned up, ready to be looked at, and it was, whoa.
And you can think about where you started.
Yeah, where I started. I really did this. Mm-hmm. How did I do that one? I don't even know.
That's the frustrating part, is not remembering how you accomplished something.
Yeah, what colors did I use there?
Especially if we don't own our own gallery or not accustomed to seeing everything sort of out and viewable at one point.
That's true. And with Open Studios, it's always... makes you feel so good at the end of the day, at the end of the weekend, at the end of the 2 weekends, because you have met people who are very interested in your work, who have asked very good questions, and you get a lot of self-satisfaction out of that. It just raises you up. It energizes you for the future artwork that you're going to do.
What's a favorite question?
I guess my favorite thing is when I'm doing an art festival or fair and I might be demonstrating, because I do that a lot, and children will come up and be very interested, you can tell. And not all children will be interested, but they'll be the one that comes along and they can't keep their eyes off of it. I'll demonstrate something, or a couple of Open Studios ago, I took out my watercolor crayons and for all the kids that came through, and they loved it. About 2 years ago for Open Studios, I had a 13 or 14-year-old young man who didn't talk a whole lot, came with his mom, and they walked around and looked, and I talked with him, and he ended up buying a painting. And I'll give him a postcard and tell him how they can frame it, but he wanted the original, and he wanted the big thing, and later on his mom called back and said, we want to get that one.
That's always exciting. I think, especially over the last couple of years, I'm seeing a lot more younger people coming through the studios during Open Studios Art Tour. And also this last year, we had a lot of people from out of the area. I had several from out of state. Yeah. I have a German couple that comes and sees me about every 4 years, and they plan their trip for Open Studios.
Yes, I've had that. We have a group of art teachers that comes over from the Valley every year and makes the tour, comes by and says hi.
I had made sure that I had some usable copper wire that somebody could hammer around and make a bracelet with if they were, especially a young kid, a family, two young boys and their mother, the eyes just lit up. And would you like to pound? Oh, can I pound something? You know, like pounding? All right, that's in. And so I figure those are good conversation pieces with kids, and they're all just sitting there. Oh, it's my turn.
And that was me back then, you know, always wanting to do things with my hands, work with tools, be outside with my dad working on the ranch instead of inside cooking with my mom.
You're listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. Our guest today is Roseanne Seitz, a local watercolorist, painter, and advocate for the arts here on the Central Coast. Last week and this, she has been taking time to pay tribute to many individuals who have shaped this arts community. We will return to this topic, but we're going to take a minute now to learn more about Roseanne's art.
The other thing I wanted to mention was SLOPE, San Luis Outdoor Painters for the Environment. I'm a member and have been for 10 years. A group of professional painters, between 10 and 20 of us, working on projects throughout the county, raising awareness by the public of different projects that different environmental organizations or ranches are involved with, trying to save the ability to have the natural habitats. We'll go partner up usually with an organization like the Land Conservancy or the California Rangeland Trust. There's quite a few that we've worked with. We paint the paintings, frame them. We set them up in a location where we can have usually a month-long show. Portion of the proceeds goes to the organization we're partnering with to help with their mission. Makes life worthwhile. It's just exciting to be out there and have access to the ocean and access to hiking trails and enjoy the beauty around us.
You talk about the fun of being outdoors and painting. Talk about some of those challenges to a plein air painter, both positive and or negative.
I know on your program you've talked with people about the challenges with the wind. In the case of watercolor, it dries the paper very quickly, and that's one of the things that is essential, that you, like if you're going to put on a watercolor wash, if part of your sky is drying and part is not, it won't evenly spread, and it'll form what's called blooms, which looks like little flower shapes in your sky, which really is not what you're looking for. Flies, equipment failure, legs on your easel that go down. Cold, heat, light on your paper or your palette when you don't want it, you know, strong shadows in your eyes so you can't see. People that come up and stand in front of you so that you can't see to paint. At Port San Luis one time, I was painting the pier and a boat, and some people came up and I turned around and talked with them. And then when I turned back to finish it, the boat was chugging out. those kind of things. One time I was painting with Denise Shriver. We were on the hillside and the cows had seen us drive up and set up, and they all started walking towards us. And pretty soon we were surrounded by these MIG cattle rubbing shoulders with each other and heading each other. It almost knocked over one of the easels. We kind of got in behind the truck, and then another truck came up and drove up further, and that was the feed truck. They thought we were there to feed them. So then they left and we finished our paintings. But it was great. I mean, painting cattle on the hillside, it was a lovely scene. You just didn't want them right up in your face and slobbering on your paper.
Okay, so that was a pretty good list of things that maybe wouldn't send me out there every day. So obviously you keep going despite all of
definitely.
These distractions.
I picture myself as an outdoor person, so I just like to be out there. And it's so neat to be able to first choose where you're going to be, get all your equipment there, and then just to sit there and enjoy it. And you really get to know that spot, being there for an hour and a half. It gets ingrained in your head. You get the feel of it. It gives me permission to sit there and relax and enjoy it. If I wasn't painting and I sat there, I would think, okay, well, I better go now. I better go do this. I better go do that. This whole list of things that I have to get done. So a day of painting is like a day of vacation. I get to go out. I'm not near a phone. I get to enjoy the calm and the peace. And in the case of painting with the slope painters, be out there with friends, discuss the art, professional development, that kind of thing.
Do you do a lot of peer review, ask other artists about your artwork, or if you're having difficulty with a piece, what they think might be wrong with it or where it should be going?
I would say there's not as much as I would like. At different times, there have been critique groups that have started. I was starting in one with some slope painters, but then people moved away, and so it didn't continue. If I'm having a problem with something, I would talk with fellow watercolor painters who I feel are at my same skill level and get ideas and tips that way. And we talk about it at different times, but not necessarily related to a specific problem. I would say when we attend a demonstration at the Watercolor Society or a demonstration somewhere, that comes into it and information is shared.
And that is sounding, on one level, as though it's a lot about technical kind of things. Then there's the other side of the aesthetic
My breakthrough kind of things for my painting were taking the classes from Milford Zorns, Jeannie Doby, Frank Webb, Dale Leighton. The biggest breakthrough was Catherine Chang Liu. Her class was focused on first educating everybody in the class on the 10 or 12 different ways that a painter can express themselves. After she went through that, then we all painted, and she asked us to make up a list of four or five attributes that of things that we felt were extremely important. And my list had on it tolerance, paying tribute to the people that came before me, my parents, my grandparents, to the land. Then she had individual conferences with us. And the conference was meant to tell, she would tell you what she saw in your painting. She looked at my slides and she said, well, this is what I see. And she named everything on my list. So I felt...
Without having seen the list.
Without having seen the list. So I felt like I was on the right track with my painting. I was saying what I wanted to say. In my case, I am painting to pay tribute to the land and to the early watercolor painters that came through here. I really got enthralled with the early California watercolor painters who traveled all over the state and painted it on site. And then we talked about marks, and my work does not have a lot of line in it. The individual brush stroke is my way of doing detail. And the washes, and with watercolor, being able to put the colors on there and let them blend, but let the light come through. I have a strong sense of design and rhythm that comes through with my painting. So I felt like she was telling me I was on the right track, giving me ideas, and going forward from there. And I came back just in awe, really, that I've been able to take the class from her, from getting her vision of things and getting educated on the different genres, because I knew they were out there, but I didn't have the vocabulary to put it to each style. It meant I didn't have to take every class that came along. Took a weight off my shoulders, because when you're an artist and you don't know what you want to say and how you want to say it, you're trying everything. And for some people, that's what they will continue to do. For me, I was more focused. Once I have decided on my paper and my paints, I want to get better at those and continue to learn more and more about them.
I think that's really well said, because it's the lucky ones who find something that really brings out that passion.
I think we've said before many times that it's mastering your medium is one of the most important things that artists can learn. And a lot of it takes just practice, 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 mm-hmm. practice, and mistakes, mistakes, mistakes.
Oh, yeah. I will always paint as long as I can, and I love it, and I love watercolor. I do oils, and I'm learning to appreciate them somewhat, too. But as of right now, watercolor is number one.
Well, Roseanne, it's just a treat to walk down memory lane, and I mean just acknowledgement lane, because fortunately a lot of this is with us. As we said, having a vision and pursuing it and making this county so very, very, very rich.
I was looking forward to this because, again, part of my my personal vision is to pay tribute, and I wanted to pay tribute and get on the record, you know, Gail Johnson starting Art After Dark, Josephine Crawford's involvement, my involvement, you know, just so people know where it started, all the hard work that went into it to get it where it is today.
And I think that's the most important part, is the immense amount of work that a very small group of people poured into the arts community here in San Luis Obispo to get us where we are today.
They had a vision. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The fact that in those first 30 plus years of the Arts Center operating basically without paid assistance, open 6 days a week.
Yeah. Story. Scrubbing bathrooms.
Scrubbing bathrooms, cleaning out storage units. I mean, if Myron Graham hadn't been around, I'd hate to think what would still be in that storage unit. And
Bunny McMean
and Gladys Gray coming along and giving the money that enabled them to build the gallery that is on that part of the property.
That's why it's the gray wing.
That, yeah, what color is this anyway? I mean, it's my vision, but it is. I mean, it's an amazing story, and again, that's the visual arts, and we could tell the story about Mozart festivals or the symphony starting up or the little theater, which I understand is the oldest one in the country.
I think it's the second oldest one in the country, continuously operating.
Wow.
We have a lot to be grateful for and proud of, and all the street fairs, all of those things. People had to start those things. They didn't just happen out of nothing. And the tribute once again to Linnea Phillips and all that she brought to that activity.
Yeah.
So it goes on and on and on. Yes.
It's like what San Luis Obispo is all about. We are friendly. We are cooperative. We work with each other. We have goals to enjoy this life that we have and to show the great things that can come out of being expressive and artistic and musical and all those things.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Carissa. Thank you, Steve. And I really am glad that I got to do this. Thank you.
It's been our honor.
Our guest today has been Roseanne Seitz, watercolorist, painter, co-owner of the gallery at the Network here in San Luis Obispo, and avid supporter and advocate of the arts for many years. And that support becomes obvious because she had the opportunity to talk about her own artwork for two consecutive programs and chose instead to pay tribute to many people who have created such a legacy in this community for the visual arts and the performing arts. We mentioned quite a few, but I realized in editing that there was a major individual whose name did not surface for some reason, and that is Arnie Nybeck, who for 30 years was the volunteer curator at the then San Luis Obispo Art Center. The list is long of those who have worked hard in this community, who have followed dreams and brought their passions to life. It has certainly been something in my 38 years of living here that I have marveled at. I wish to take this time to honor two people who died this February, Linda and Michael Adelson. They were the founders of Seekers, a fine craft gallery that they opened in Cambria in the early 80s. Their passion was handcrafted glass. And why was that unique? Because at that time, fine craft galleries really didn't exist. And they had the ability to understand how to market. And they knew that if lights were on across the street and people were coming out of a fine dining experience in Cambria, they might just say, let's go take a look. And that's what they did. So the two of them are easily added to the list of innovators in this county and to whom we have a great deal to thank. You have been listening to Ears on Art here on KCBX Public Radio for the California Central Coast. As you're out and about participating in some way in the arts, you can bet that most of it started by people just like any of us, except that they had a dream that demanded their absolute attention. I am Chrissy Hewitt, and on behalf of my co-host, Stephen DeLuque, I want to thank you so much for listening.